and good afternoon. The time is 3 o'clock and you are tuned to a KTOO News. This is a Juno afternoon for Tuesday, October 15th. My name is Martha Moore, today's host, and we've got a great program lined up for you today. We'll talk with Nicole Hollenstad and Dr. Carolyn Brown about this Saturday's Cancer Connection Health Forum. Terry Campbell will be here to highlight the 14th annual Lights on After School event this Thursday. Rosemary Hagevig will discuss this evening's presentation on end-of-life issues, and we'll learn about this Thursday's college fair with guest Terry Calvin. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast for today and tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers. Wednesday, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lakota people from the Pine Ridge Reservation are taking part in a four-day trail ride in South Dakota. As Jim Kent reports, the spiritual journey is to draw attention and oppose the planned Keystone Pipeline.
Shunka Wakan, literally sacred dog, is the Lakota name for the horse. Before its arrival, the dog was the primary animal of the Lakota. Since the horse entered the Great Plains culture, it's been viewed by the Lakota as a sacred gift from the Creator. Percy Whiteplume says the Lakota regularly take part in trail rides as spiritual offerings for a cause.
To the Lakota people, the horse has always been a part of who they are. Armies that pursued the native peoples couldn't believe the riding ability of the native peoples on horseback. And that's a part of who we are. And so how else to make an awareness is to do it on horseback.
Whiteplume adds that the entire ride is taking place along public roadways.
And it's not a protest ride, as you would say, that everybody's carrying signs and everybody's, you know, giving mean looks or anything like that. We want people to know that this is a peaceful ride. We're riding with prayers. We're riding with good thoughts.
The riders are traveling from Wombly through the Badlands to Phillip and then to the Takini School on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. Whiteplume says extra horses are being brought along for those who'd like to take part in the ride but are without a mount. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The biological father in the Baby Veronica case is being honored at the National Congress of American Indians Convention. KDOU's Kirk Gortney has more.
Just a week after deciding to drop all custody claims to 4-year-old Veronica, her father, Dustin Brown, is being honored at the NCAI National Meeting in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Brown and a Cherokee Nation attorney announced last week they were dropping custody claims in state and tribal courts. Brown also said he was working on ways he could be involved in his daughter's life with Matt and Melanie Capo Bianco of South Carolina, who adopted Veronica. The child had been the subject of court battles since she was born to a non-Cherokee mother who put the girl up for adoption. Last month, Oklahoma Supreme Court dissolved an order keeping Veronica in the state, leading to her return to the Capo Bianco family. This summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act did not apply in this case. Discussions at the NCAI gathering include the Baby Veronica case and issues involving Native children. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
Over the weekend, the Hopi Foundation awarded its Barbara Chester Award to a Rwandan psychiatrist. The award recognizes those working with torture victims. KUII's Constance Devereaux reports.
The last time Dr. Nasun Munyademutsa saw his mother alive, she gave him this advice.
Go and never come back.
Yet he did go back, after the genocide, as a psychiatrist offering a process of healing to victims. He provides a safe place, making it possible for them
to talk, to think, to feel, to share, and then to see if it is possible to overcome from a crazy situation.
Munyademutsa's work embodies the Hopi principles of Suminanwa, helping others in times of need, and Hitananwa, taking initiative. Despite the loss of his own family in the genocide, he takes inspiration from the Hopi.
How they love their culture. How they love people, how they're open to people coming from far.
According to Human Rights Watch, more than 100 nations in the world actively engage in torture. The Barbara Chester Award is unique in honoring anti-torture workers. For National Native News, this is Constance Devereaux.
During this week in 1966, the first statewide Alaska Federation of Natives conference was held. Thousands of people now gather annually to address issues facing Native communities. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are tuned to KTOO News, and this is a Juneau afternoon. And I have with me in the studio Nicole Hollingstad with Cancer Connection, and Dr. Carolyn Brown and Dr. George Brown. And they have all joined me to talk about the Cancer Connection Health Forum, which is being held next Saturday at Centennial Hall from 11:30 in the morning to 2 p.m. Did I get that right?
That's right. Although, depending on how people look at their calendars, some people would say this Saturday. It is the 19th, so it's this coming Saturday.
Okay.
So make sure everybody has the date right.
Yeah, you can. So the 19th, this Saturday. And, yeah, welcome to the studio, everybody. Thanks for coming in. So go ahead and tell me about this health forum, who the speakers are, and what the topics are.
Okay, well, maybe I'll start with that. We're very, very lucky this year to have Dr. Kate Pyman and Dr. Bob Urata, who will be our main speakers. Every year we choose a focus, and it usually involves cancer of some sort. This year we're going to choose the top three or five, depending on what the speakers want to talk about, of the cancers that are problematic in Alaska for Alaskans. And so we know that the major cancers that are most common include breast, prostate, lung, colorectal, and bladder. Sadly, the deaths that take our people away are lung, colon, breast, pancreas, and prostate. Some of those involve women, the breast, mostly. Some of them involve men, totally. But there will be information for all of us, and they'll be speaking about that. But this year's focus is the screening techniques for those cancers. Some have good screening techniques. Some don't have very good screening techniques. And so that will be discussed, and it will be immensely informational, I think, for all of us.
So are cancers here in Juneau different than other places?
They're pretty similar, I would say, across the country. You may change the order of those five that I've just mentioned, one or two places, but that's generally it across the country.
And why is screening for cancer so important?
Because the earlier we can detect it, the earlier we can do something about most of them. And we certainly know that with breast cancer. Breast cancer used to be a death knell for women. It no longer is if it is caught early enough in the appropriate management. We've known for a long time that following prostate cancer, reasonably, perhaps with or without some kind of screening, can be extremely life-saving for people. So each of those has a different. We know that colorectal cancer is almost totally preventable with the correct screening, and that's what you'll learn about when you come to this Saturday meeting.
So I know that there's a wide range of cancer screenings, all the way from the Pap smear, which I think is probably one of the most effective screening tools to find cervical cancer, all the way to PSA blood tests, which I think are still fairly controversial. Is that true?
Very much so.
And will this sort that out for us?
It certainly will. It's going to be immensely helpful for people. The myths, for instance, we used to do Pap smears a lot, often on many people. Those patterns have now changed so that that's a little bit different. We don't necessarily have to do PSAs on all men now. So each of those has a different screening technique if it's available.
And this forum is for men and women alike?
Let George speak to that.
Well, I'll start with the good news. It's not the bad news, then the good news. Often, in fact, I heard this spot on another radio station today that real men wear gowns. And you can think a little bit about what all that means. And fortunately, a lot more men are beginning to be able to go in to have examinations and to, you know, submit themselves to these screening procedures, but they can definitely be life-saving. And so I'm here to say I want men to show up and to know it's okay to care about their health and to think of it in a prevention sense, because with cancer, the sooner it is found, definitely the better. And cancer is certainly much more treatable than it was even 10 years ago. Now, the good news is, even better news for Saturday, is they serve meals. I've been to the, they used to call them the Women's Health Forum. Now it's the Health Forum because men and women both are going to be there. But I've been there a number of years, and they're very good meals. And it's a superbly nutritious, healthy, free lunch. Thank you.
And George makes an excellent point that in the past, Cancer Connection has held different gendered health forums. We've had a women's health forum in the fall and a men's health forum in the spring. And what we realized is that there was a fair amount of creep in those populations. So it made sense for us to combine it into a single community health forum. So it's important to remember it's open to all, and we'll open our doors at 11:30. Lunch is served about noon, and we're just going to have fantastic speakers and hope folks can make it out to Centennial Hall.
So this is a combination of men and women, and that really does make sense because it's good for everyone to know everything.
Absolutely.
So having two doctors in the studio here, maybe you can tell me or speak about personal responsibility in making healthcare decisions and not just leaving it up to your doctor to decide for you what you should do.
Oh, this is a wonderful topic and a wonderful subject because used to when the Internet first came out, the doctor's worst scenario is for a patient to come in and say, well, I've had this problem, and I've just been on the Internet, and I have a couple of questions. And then suddenly they drag out three pages of legal-sized pieces of paper. And that was very challenging for many, many physicians until we got used to it, and we all started reading the same thing. And now we welcome that. The more patients we bring in, the more questions, the better we are. Obviously, people have learned to take responsibility for themselves, whether it's food, whether it's diet, whether it's early screening, whether it's early knowing what to do and what not to do. I think it's absolutely wonderful, and of course I think the Internet has helped us a great deal.
And Nicole, you're with the Cancer Connection. Are they sponsoring this event?
In fact, we're the ones who are putting it on. Mm-hmm. We do have many sponsors who work with us, in particular Bartlett Regional Hospital. The health forum itself, the women's health forum, the first one began as far back as 1998, the men's health forum in 99, and it's been part of Cancer Connection since then. The attendance and the program has grown over the years, so Cancer Connection is tremendously proud to be able to offer an information resource to folks in Juneau, because really that is our mission, is to provide information and resources to people who maybe have been recently diagnosed or who need to know more about cancer for whatever reason that might be.
Is Cancer Connection a local group or is it a national?
It is. Well, our group is a local group. Cancer Connection in Juneau is absolutely a grassroots effort. It is an all-volunteer board of directors. As myself as a president, that's a volunteer position that rotates. We do have administrative help part-time, but it's really dedicated, passionate people who want to bring information and resources into communities of Southeast Alaska. So the fundraising we do, the programs that we offer, really do stay at home in these Southeast communities to benefit Southeast cancer patients and survivors.
And so this event on Saturday is free?
It's absolutely free.
And it comes with a free lunch.
It does. I said before the program started, there is such a thing as a free lunch.
And a healthy free lunch.
Right. And we want to thank Abby's Kitchen for the work they'll be doing on that lunch.
Excellent. So if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Nicole Hollingstad, Dr. Carolyn Brown, and Dr. George Brown about the upcoming Cancer Connection Health Forum. It's on Saturday at Centennial Hall at 11:30 a.m., and it's free, and it includes lunch.
That's right.
Anything you want to add?
One last thing. As I said, we hope to be focusing on the top main cancers that both cause problems and kill people in our state. We hope to be talking on what can we do to screen for those. There are some times when people have to fly north or fly south to get their care, but what people don't know is that there's an awful lot that can be done in this community by these experts with the resources that we have at Bartlett and the expertise that we have of the physicians in our community. I anticipate that Dr. Urata and Dr. Pyman will be speaking about both of those. We will also have quite a bit of specific literature at the Centennial Hall so that people need to take away stuff to read about what they can really do at home. Some people find that very helpful too, so we hope they'll show up.
Well, that's great, and there's a lot to be said for being treated close to home with your supports around you. And thank you all for coming in, and good luck with the event.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is KTOO News. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Martha Moore, your host. And Terry Campbell has joined me in the studio to talk about the 14th annual Lights On After School event. And this is on Thursday. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And I understand that you were selected as an after school ambassador, one of just 12 across the country. That's quite an honor.
Oh, it was really exciting. I've had an opportunity to work through my involvement with the Department of Education in after-school programs for more than a decade. So I've had a lot of relationships nationally and was very excited to be selected as an ambassador.
Well, congratulations for that. And what is Lights On After School?
Lights On After School is really a celebration. It's a coming together and examining, highlighting the fact that we do have a lot of wonderful after-school opportunities that are available for students. But both in our community and across the nation, there aren't enough programs that are available for the students that want and need it. So Lights On in Juneau is going to be both a celebration of what we have currently and also what we need. So Lights On, we're excited about celebrating at Zenta Kahini and the Floyd Dryden Middle School, as well as programs going on at Zach Gordon Youth Center.
Okay, and what are the times and places?
We're going to be celebrating right after school from 3 to 4:30 at both Floyd Dryden and DZ Middle Schools. And then Zach Gordon will also host something starting at 3 and going to about 6:30.
So understand the celebration is new to Juneau, but after-school programs are not. Tell me about them.
Correct. Lights On After School has been going on for 14 years now. The Juneau-based programs are just joining in. Part of my role as ambassador was to basically make some noise in my home community about after school. So I'm volunteering in one of our newer after-school programs. It's a community-based project called BAM, and it's student-named. It stands for Body and Mind, or Before and After Middle School. And that program started by a group of people, dedicated people, who found some funding after the Boys and Girls Club closed a couple of years ago. And there was really an examination of the most needy population to receive after-school services. And so the middle schools were a targeted population. So that program started its first year last year.
And what sorts of things do they do in these programs?
It's a really wonderful combination of sports-minded activities such as yoga and fitness activities like dance fitness, judo activities, arts, music, junior police academy, safe sitters club. That we really try to encourage local community organizations, particularly those that have an educational outreach function, to volunteer in those programs. We're also really excited to welcome the Juneau Economic Development Council to offer some programming in science, technology, engineering, and math for those middle school students.
So tell me, what needs are these programs designed to fill, and what are some of the benefits?
Really, what we're trying to do is excite kids and engage kids in out-of-school time hours. One of the most dangerous times for our kids is right after school. And in Juneau, about half of our middle school population is home alone after school. So we're really trying to get kids engaged, because after-school programs do a number of things. They inspire kids to learn, they provide that safe and supportive environment, and they help working families so that they're not worried about their kids after school. And what we found, the research has shown us, and what we found even locally, is that after-school programs and kids engage in them, they do better in school. They attend more. They get better grades. They're more connected to both the teachers and the caring adults that are in the programs. And we see better outcomes, like better graduation rates and course completions.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And so what's going to be happening at this event?
Oh, the different things at different sites, so it's really exciting. At Floyd Dryden and at DZ, there'll be a variety of activities. There'll be art studio, an abstract art course. There's going to be a Get Rhythm, which is a music course. Students will have an opportunity to try something yoga, dojo, disco, and dance fitness. They'll have an opportunity to watch judo. Both boys and girls will have an opportunity for some connecting with adults in a her space and a guy space activity. And really our purpose for the Lights On After School event is to engage kids who might not already be involved in after school and give them a sampling of some of the after school opportunities that they'll be finding in the coming months at the middle schools.
So is there an organization that sponsors these activities and this event?
Yes. The National After School Alliance is helping sponsor this event by providing some stipend money for the decorations and some of the free giveaways for students, as well as the snacks for students and folks who are coming in. So they're providing the base of that. But the most important organization is the Juneau After School Coalition, which is a group of people that have gone out and sought funding to help support the limited staff members who help coordinate and organize the program, as well as pay some presenters. And then a huge group is the Juneau School District, who's volunteering the space, and the wonderful principals who are helping to organize and identify classroom space, et cetera, in the schools.
Who would you like to come to this event, these events?
We'd really like listeners who to encourage middle school students to come to the event. We've invited our city officials to come to the event. The mayor issued a proclamation declaring Thursday lights on after school in Juneau. We also have a governor's proclamation for the state for lights on after school. We've invited people from the governor's office, our local state representatives, officials have been invited as well, and anybody who's really interested. We've got great volunteers from the Rotary and great volunteers from the Juneau After School Coalition Steering Committee, and both of the middle school PTOs are really coming out to help us volunteer in this event.
So if somebody's interested in getting involved with this as a volunteer, what can they do besides coming to this event? Is there some place they can go to find out more information and get a hold of someone?
Yes, we are very interested in having people get involved, both local community organizations that might have an education outreach mission, as well as individuals who have something that they would like to share. We're always looking for people who want to work with middle school populations and get along well with that population. Maybe they have a hobby that they want to share, like photography, or something that they do, like knitting or crocheting, or perhaps even painting, etc. We're trying to also encourage some young people in their late teens and early 20s, maybe college students, etc. And if they are interested in either volunteering their services or working for a fee in offering some sessions in the middle school programs, I would encourage them to contact the coordinator, who's Betsy Brenneman, and her phone number is 463-1899, extension 214.
Okay, great. So I've been speaking with Terry Campbell about the 14th annual Lights On After School event. It will be held this Thursday from 3 to 4:30 at Zonta Kahini and Floyd Dryden, and from 3 to 6:30 at Zach Gordon Youth Center. And thanks for coming in, Terry, and thank you for doing this. This sounds like a very worthwhile enterprise for you.
I really appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 15th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of the writer who gave this advice: always get to the dialogue as soon as possible. I always feel the thing to go for is speed. Nothing puts the reader off more than a great slab of prose at the start. I think the success of every novel, if it's a novel of action, depends on the high spots. The thing to do is to say to yourself, which are my big scenes, and then get every drop of juice out of them. P.G. Woodhouse, Pelham Grenville Woodhouse, born Guildford, England, 1881. His father worked in Hong Kong. His mother traveled back and forth, so the boy was raised by a series of aunts. Got a job as a bank clerk, started writing humorous stories and poems. First came to the United States to cover a boxing match and fell in love. Woodhouse said, being in America was like being in heaven without going to all the bother and expense of dying. Moved to Greenwich Village, 1909, started to write stories for the Saturday Evening Post about an imaginary cartoonish England, very polite but stupid aristocrats like Bertie Wooster, who was looked after by his butler Jeeves. P.G. Woodhouse, who wrote more than 100 books. It's the birthday of a great radio announcer, Bob Trout, the newscaster, born in Wake County, North Carolina, 1909. Wanted to be a writer someday, like his hero Jack London. Worked at various odd jobs, winding up at a radio station, WJSV, which was bought by CBS, and then Robert Trout moved to New York, joined Edward R. Murrow in the CBS newsroom. He became famous for his ability to improvise during major news events. He got the nickname the Iron Man. during the Allied invasion of Normandy. He began broadcasting at 3 in the morning, didn't stop for more than 7 hours. It was Robert Trout who announced the official end of World War II to Americans. And when in April 1945 he got the news of Franklin D. Roosevelt's death, he interrupted a broadcast and delivered an impromptu 25-minute tribute to Roosevelt without any notes and any advance work. He was a formal radio announcer, dressed in tailored three-piece suits, wore a hat out of doors, and tipped it whenever he passed a woman. And it's the birthday of Italo Calvino, born in Santiago de Las Vegas, Cuba, 1923, to Italian parents, joined the Italian resistance during World War II, afterward moved to Turin, and found a community of novelists and tried to write realistic novels, politically committed novels, and then decided rather than trying to write the book he thought he ought to write, he would write the book, the sort of book that he himself would want to read. And those were novels that combined fantasy and reality, including The Baron in the Trees and If on a Winter's Night a Traveler. Here's a poem for today by William Blake, The Garden of Love. I went to the Garden of Love and saw what I never had seen. A chapel was built in the midst where I used to play on the green. And the gates of this chapel were shut, and Thou Shalt Not writ over the door. So I turned to the Garden of Love that so many sweet flowers bore. And I saw it was filled with graves and tombstones where flowers should be. And priests in black gowns were walking their rounds and binding with briars my joys and desires. The Garden of Love by William Blake. That's the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you are listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. And Rosemary Hagedig is with me here in the studio to talk about an end-of-life presentation tonight. Hi, Rosemary. How are you?
Hi, Martha. Thanks for having me.
Uh-huh. Where is this presentation and what time?
The presentation is at Centennial Hall. It's tonight. And it is it starts at 5:30 and ends at 8. And the doors will open at 5:15, so if you want a really good seat and a little snack beforehand, get there early.
Okay, great. And who will be speaking?
Yeah, the title of our program tonight is Advanced Planning, the Best Gift That You Can Give to Your Family. And our speakers are Beth Chapman and Vance Sanders, who are known in the community for their expertise in dealing with end-of-life issues. And they will be followed by a presentation on hospice, Your Journey, Your Choice. And Nancy Davis, who is the former director of hospice and home care in Juneau, will be presenting there. And then we'll have a short break followed by a panel discussion with Vance Sanders, Beth Chapman, Nancy Davis, and Dr. Bob Urata, who has been the volunteer medical director for hospice since 1988, will be joining the panel.
Wow, great.
So it'll
great
be quite
lineup.
A good program, yeah.
So give us just a little bit of information about end-of-life decisions that might be covered.
Right. Well, there's a number of things that people are advised to be thinking about as they end of life, but, I mean, at any time in life, it's good to have these your affairs in order, so to speak, to have a clear understanding with members of your family, with your physician, sometimes even with your legal advisors about what your last wishes are going to entail both with respect to health directives and also sort of your financial affairs and everything else that is associated with that. So I think that the program tonight will cover a good deal of that information, give people lots to think about, and it's a really good opportunity for families to come and start thinking about this together as a family, because it generally is a member of your family or a close friend that you end up entering into these agreements with.
And for anyone who's in the healthcare field who uses this information to counsel patients, I imagine that's important for them to come as well.
Right, yes, it is. And I think the more cross-fertilization of interest that we have there tonight, the better it will be for everyone involved.
So why do people avoid making these decisions? Because I know people who plan everything. They plan the retirement. They plan, you know, their vacations. But they just have no interest in making these plans.
Well, you know, I think it's sort of a different strokes for different folks kind of scenario for everybody. Some people are far more comfortable getting these things tied down and making sure that the things that they want to have in place as they mature are there, and others are less likely and less inclined to take it on. And one of the things that we hope to do tonight is to not only to emphasize how important it is, both for the individual and for family members, for instance, but also take some of the mystique out of it and hopefully make it a more comfortable activity for people to engage in.
And who is sponsoring this event?
The AARP, Juno Community Council, and the End of Life Foundation are partnering on this event tonight at Centennial Hall.
Okay, and what's your connection with this?
I'm a member of the AARP Community Council. I'm also the state president for AARP.
Oh, okay. So I'm speaking with Rosemary Hagevig about the presentation tonight. It's at Centennial Hall from 5:30 to 8 o'clock. You can come early at 5:15 and try to get some snacks and a good seat. And the presentation is about end-of-life decisions and advanced directives.
It's called Advanced Planning, the Best Gift That You Can Give Your Family.
Advanced Planning, the Best Gift That You Can Give Your Family. Very important topic.
Yes.
And thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Martha.
Sat on their park bench like bookends, a newspaper blown through the grass falls on the round toes of the high shoes of the old friends. Old friends, winter companions, the old men lost in their overcoats, waiting for the sunset. The sounds of the city sifting through trees settle like dust on the shoulders of the old friends. Can you imagine us years from today sharing a park bench quietly? How terribly strange to be 70. Old friends, memory brushes the same years, silently sharing the same fear. Thank you. it was, and what a time it was, it was. A time of innocence, a time of confidences. Long ago it must be, I have a photograph. Preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.
And you are tuned to KTOO, and this is a Juno afternoon. Terry Calvin has come in today to the studio to talk about the annual college career fair. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. And are you with the school district?
I am. I am a career advisor with the school district this year. In the past, I have been working just at Juno Douglas High School, and this year I'm actually the career advisor at both high schools, at Thunder Mountain and JDHS.
Okay, and you're here to talk about the annual college career fair, and that is on Thursday, October 17. Where is this, and what time?
All right, this year's college career fair is being held out at Thunder Mountain High School in their main gym. We're going to start running the kids through there about 9:15, and we'll have the Thunder Mountain, Yakus High School, and Juno Douglas High School students coming through the fair during the day. We've also, this year, implemented something new that we're going to try out, and we've got the middle school AVID kids coming in from both Floyd Dryden and Marie Drake coming to join us, so they can kind of get a taste of what colleges are out there and get to talk to some of the reps. And then we have an evening session that's for students and parents to come alike between 5 and 6 o'clock. So students and their parents can come back and sit down and talk with the college reps together.
So it's great that you're having younger kids come. I guess the message there, it's never too early to start planning.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it just gives them an idea so that they've kind of been there, done that in eighth grade, and get them kind of thinking about their future. And so it's not quite as much of a shock when they actually get into high school and start researching schools a little bit more. And when they start planning their classes in high school, they kind of get a better idea of what they should be taking for the studies that they want to pursue after high school.
So what is the fair like? What can people expect to see there?
Well, right now we have about 60 schools signed up, actually 60 schools as well as some other trades that are going to come in and talk with our students. And it's just an open forum. We'll have the main gym at the high school opened up with tables set up for the reps. And you just move at your own pace. You'll have a program that lets you know what schools are in what areas of the gym, and you just go and chit-chat with the representatives and learn a little bit more about their schools.
And do they give out some information?
Absolutely. Yep, they bring all kinds of what we like to call swag. So they bring their flyers. They also bring, some of them will have postcards, so that if you don't want to take home a bunch of materials, that you can actually fill out the postcards and they will start sending things to your home. For students that are coming, it's a really great idea to bring a bag or something to collect that information in, because they do have information about financial aid at their schools. They usually will have some flyers that they have you can take a look at and see what the school's all about.
Do colleges compete for these students?
Oh, absolutely. Colleges totally compete for these schools. Hence the reason for the college fair. They all want to come in and have that one-on-one time for them. Absolutely. This year we've got a couple of new representatives coming in, which is kind of cool. We've got the Academy of Interactive Entertainment. And this is a gaming school where the kids can go and learn to program and develop games, and they've got schools throughout the U.S., so it's not just in one area. And that's kind of cool, because we do have a lot of kids that are getting more and more interested in the gaming information. We've also got the Art Institute, which they do design as well as clothing, doing internet information, etc., and they come from all over as well. They've got campuses all over the U.S., which is really neat to see. Not only do we see the traditional schools coming, but we also see some of the non-traditional schools coming, as well as the military. We've got a couple of military groups that are going to be showing up and talking with our students, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of career training organizations are there?
Right now we've got AVTEC is coming, which is a career training school up in Anchorage area. But we've also got the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development is going to come so they can talk about jobs, because we realize that not all students are going to take off and go into college, so they're still going to need to prep for the workforce. We've also got Southeast Resource Center coming, the Learning Center, and they're going to come talk about their Construction Academy and Job X. So there's quite a variety of different companies that will be there, schools.
Besides the University of Alaska, what colleges or universities are most popular among Juno graduate, high school graduates?
Oh, gosh. You know, anything in the Pacific Northwest. We find that Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Idaho are all fairly popular schools for our kids from Juno. Kind of keeps them close to home, but yet gives them the city aspect of going into schools. Western Washington is really popular. So is the University of Oregon, Portland State. And then you've got your private schools. Pacific University and Linfield are all pretty high up on the list. But, you know, our Alaska schools, we've got quite a few Alaska schools that are actually coming to the fair. We tend to think of the University of Alaska system, which has UAF, UAA, and UAS. But in the state of Alaska, we also have the Alaska Bible College, the Alaska Christian School, that are also out there for our students. And one of the things I kind of want to plug for the Alaska schools is the Governor's Performance Scholarship, the APS also is known as, that the students, if they qualify their senior year, they can actually go to those schools with a pretty good scholarship. And so it's always good for the kids to look at the schools in the state as well as out of state.
And so who are you looking to come to the open house?
For the between 5 and 6,
yes.
That's where we want the parents to come in. Mm-hmm. The kids have a chance to go through there, but college is not just a student-led event. I mean, it's a life family choice, and so we like to have the students and the parents be able to come together and take a look at some of these schools together. So it's really for the parents to also come in, or any other community members. If you do have other 8th graders or you want to start early, it's for public just to come in and take a look.
Great. And pick up some swag.
And pick up some swag, yes, definitely.
I've been speaking with Terry Calvin about the annual College Career Fair, and it's coming this Thursday at Thunder Mountain High School Gymnasium. And tell us the times again, Terry.
We will start our students coming through at 9:15, and they will end about 3:10, and then we will have an open house from 5 to 6 p.m. for anybody in the community who would like to come by and say hello.
And do the schools bring their students to the event? I mean,
yes. I'm guessing the question there is Juno Douglas High School mm-hmm. will actually bus their students out. They're busing about 200, 250 students from the high school out to Thunder Mountain. And then Thunder Mountain students will attend. And then Yakus is also busing their students out to the event. And we take turns. So this year it's at Thunder Mountain, and then next year we'll host it at JDHS. And in theory, the thought is that the students at the host school, so this year Thunder Mountain, will have their freshman and sophomore kids go through the fair as well. And then when you are actually on the busing end of things traveling, it's usually the juniors and seniors that are busing out and taking a look at the schools.
Okay. Thanks so much, Terry, for coming in. And, good luck with that event.
Thank you so much.
Support for this program comes from GCI Pay-Per-View, including boxing matches, UFC, and WWE. Pay-Per-View can be accessed through the on-screen menu when ordering available with the GCI TV remote. More information at gci.com.
This is Bird Note. In Yosemite, October winds begin to blow, making music with drying leaves and seed pods. Acorn woodpeckers, Clark's nutcrackers, mountain chickadees, and red-breasted nuthatches know it's time to stock the larder. Yet for us, there's still time to enjoy a hike before the harshness of winter. Walk with me and hear what John Muir wrote in 1901. Climb the mountains and get their good tidings. Nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. The winds will blow their own freshness into you, and the storms their energy, while cares will drop off like autumn leaves. Many of the sounds today were recorded by Gordon Hempton and provided courtesy of QuietPlanet.com. The bird sounds are from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
And that's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the guests who came in today. To listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno Afternoon programs, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for Juno Afternoon. Our host will be Ann Fuller. We'll learn about this week's JWAC-UAS Forum on Canada, with guest speaker William Morrison. Shava Lee will be here to highlight Saturday's pet festival, Wolfstock. Stacy Polson will discuss events going on at the Nugget Mall, and we'll talk with Mary Lou Spartz about Saturday's Readers Theater production of The Real Story of the Sinking of the Princess Sophia. That, Writer's Almanac, Music, and More, Wednesday at 3, that's tomorrow, on KTOO-FM. The weather tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers early in the evening, patchy fog late, lows around 40. Wednesday, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 49. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, patchy fog late, lows 33 to 39. Thursday, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 50. Friday, mostly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, chance of rain, highs around 49. Stay tuned for All Things Considered. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon Creek and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We are also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Up next at 4 o'clock is All Things Considered.